This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, I'm Hanif Baharuddin. You're tuned into the show that explores the narratives of historical landmarks and places in the Klang Valley. This month, we're going to be visiting Bukit Nanas. Bukit Nanas is one of the more unique hills that made up the topography of KL. It has one of the oldest tropical rainforests in the capital and also some prominent institutions, such as St. John's Cathedral, St. John's Institution, and of course the famous convent Bukit Nanas. But what else is there? And what's the story behind that name? Here's Elizabeth Cardosa, our resident heritage conservation expert, with the details.
You know, Bukit Nanas, I think, is something that people in KL know as an area, partly because of the forest, the Bukit Nanas Forest Reserve there, which with the KL Tower. I think people kind of associate it maybe with the KL Tower. Some other people, if you went to school in the area, might have associated it with the schools. There are several schools in the area. And then, of course, the whole story about why is it called Bukit Nanas, right? I mean, the Pineapple Hill, so to speak. And so there are lots of, you know, cerita about the origins of the name. But essentially, it is on one side of the Klang River. It borders the Klang River. On one side of it, it goes down the hill. And it was known originally in the mid-1800s as the stockade for, you see early maps that say Istana there, you know, and the stockade for whether it was Sultan Puasa, but it was essentially a high-rise from which whoever had control of it, you look down at the river, anybody who is bringing tin down the river is visible to you because you are on a higher ground, and so you are in command. You are in control. But the story is that during the Selangor Civil War, they planted pineapples on the hills because that would prevent in the dark, anybody coming on a springing surprise attack on you, because if you have a stockade, which is like a fort, a kubu or some kind, up there, and then your enemies want to come and surprise you, they would, of course, have to do it at night, because during the day they can be seen, right? So it's very galop, right, at night, because we don't have the kind of lights that we have currently, no electricity that shines, you know, bright the city. So the sharp thorns, the sharp leaves of the pineapple would poke people, and so you'd have, you know, no surprise attack because they'll be going ow, 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 and then you can hear them. So that's the area of the hill. But Bukit Nanas, I think, in terms of the forest reserve, is also, it's acknowledged in the KL City Plan, it's acknowledged in documentation that that is a primary forest. And the thing is, I think that over the years, the size of the area that was designated for forest reserve has diminished by 2/3, I would say. You know, the original hectareage of the area, it's been encroached upon by the city, because it used to be outside the city. It was north of the city boundaries. It was behind and beyond Court Hill, which is where Maybank Tower is now. And you know, it wasn't developed. The area wasn't, you know, hugely developed, right? And so the populated area would have been closer to the confluence of the river, what we consider to be the old KL city centre. So this was a bit out in the boonies, because you are talking about people who have to walk, right? You know, there were coffee plantations. There was a coffee plantation there, which was the Weld. And on Well Road, which is one of the roads that bound Bukit Nanas. The other road that bounds Bukit Nanas is Jalan Ampang, which I said, and beside Jalan Ampang, of course, is the river. And that area, I think, I would say that people in KL who grew up in KL will remember it as a bukit. Nowadays, you kind of lose sight of the fact that it is on a hill, because I mean, when you drive up, yeah, maybe if you have to walk up the hill, yeah, you will. Like Jalan Bukit Nanas, you have to do that, right? But on the whole, because of the high rises that surround it, the height of the hill, you know, the fact that it's a hill has been diminished, I think, over the years. So that's, generally speaking, the area on which Convent Bukit Nanas sits.
There's also KL Forest Eco Park, right? Is that part of Bukit Nanas or...?
Well, KL Forest Eco Park is the forest reserve. It's now called KL Forest Eco Park. It used to be called Bukit Nanas Forest Reserve. I think it's gone through many names. Within which you have the KL Tower development. The KL Tower development, there was also some waterworks. Jabatan Pertalian, the DID, the old GPS, yeah? They have a reservoir there. And that was, you know, what serviced KL area in terms of a reservoir of water. I think that when we're looking generally at the forest reserve, like I say, you know, what dominates the forest reserve, and you can see it when you're on KL Tower, is you will see a forest tree cover. But the size of the forest tree cover, if you look at earlier maps, you will see has really shrunk. So the fact that it is a virgin forest, if it's a virgin forest, means, you know, the trees are their primary. Unlike Frim, which is a secondary forest, it's not a virgin forest. It was planted later, yeah? Virgin forests need a certain size, a certain number of plants, a certain, I think, biodiversity in terms both of the flora and the fauna there, in order for it to continue to regenerate. Ecologists, I think, and environmentalists worry about the area because, you know, they say that because of the shrinking forest size, you're losing its biodiversity. So it is, I think, considered a bit of a dying forest in a sense because it doesn't have enough to regenerate and to continue to sustain itself as long as the encroachment continues. But the eco park, has got trails. It's got a forest canopy walk, which is great. You know, it allows visitors to enter both from the road, Jalan Raja Chulan, which is Well Road, or used to be called Well Road, and from Bukit Nanas itself up in the hill above it. And the entrance, that entrance is opposite the convent, Bukit Nanas. And then, of course, you can also enter from the KL Tower development into the forest reserve from there. There are gateways that let you in.
Okay, I know I told you earlier that we're going to be talking about Convent Bukit Nanas specifically, but there are other institutions there as well, yes. Right? There's another school, St. John's Institution, of course, another famous school, and then there's also St. John's Cathedral there, right?
Well, there are lots of institutions. I mean, not just schools. I mean, and when you talk about St. John's Institution, there is the secondary school, which is the famous one. And it shares its premises with, it's sort of part of it has become a private school, so that's St. John's International. But you also have St. John's Primary School. Convent Bukit Nanas itself has got both a primary and a secondary school. And they're all sort of, they all have different principals, they have, because they're such large, you know, institutions. But you have St. John's Cathedral, which is the main Catholic cathedral for Kuala Lumpur. You have Fatima Kindergarten, you have a lot of older buildings, and you also have the house of the Archbishop of the Catholic Diocese on the hill, so to speak. So there is, several institutions that's on sort of toward the centre of the hill, but flanking and from Jalan Ampang's side, you have several other buildings which are well known, and these are kind of like their entrances into the AIA building complex. There are entrances into the Ming building. These are all kind of like older, more established buildings that were set up in the 1960s and 1970s as KL kind of like started to grow and the high-rises started to grow.
That's heritage conservation expert Elizabeth Cardosa with a primer on Bukit Nenas. We're going to take a short break. Coming up next, we're going to be exploring one of Bukit Nenas' famous institutions, the School Convent Bukit Nenas. Stay tuned, I'm Hanif Baharudin and this is I Love KL on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're listening to I Love KL, bringing you closer to the people and places of our capital city. I'm Hanif Baharudin and I'm joined by Elizabeth Cardosa, a heritage conservation expert, in our monthly look at buildings and places in the city. This month, we're giving attention to Bukit Nenas, and in the first part, Elizabeth has given us a primer on the history of the area. Now, she's going to be sharing her knowledge on one of Bukit Nenas' famous children, the prestigious Convent Bukit Nenas.
Convent Bukit Nenas has this specific convent in terms of its current location. It goes back to the early 1910s, I think 1911, 1912, when it was originally opened. The school itself sets its origins before the turn of the century, in the 1895, I think it was, when they were established by the sisters, which are the Catholic nuns, as a premises to teach, to educate, but they also had a very social character, that they're well known as an orphanage. People actually kind of like knew, it wasn't like a baby drop, but it was kind of like an early baby drop. So orphans were sent there for the nuns who looked after them. They also have this current premises, I believe, still has a site where a school for the hearing impaired are located. A few of the nuns still live there. Part of the convent is not just the school, not just the primary and the secondary school, but it also houses the quarters for the nuns and their own establishment. And they have, alongside there, they have, I'm going to say an orphanage, but they have a home where people who, especially abandoned children, female babies, who then grew up and who never got placed, maybe who never got adopted, continued to live there, who worked there, and consider that their home. But these orphanages, they were called orphanages at that time, were sort of, you would find many. The old Convent Light Street in Penang, Convent Mua, you would find them in Singapore, you would find them actually a lot of places. Of the convent schools used to have these places where babies would, abandoned babies would be brought up and looked after. But now, as they haven't been taking in newer institutions, you have social welfare, you have other institutions for orphanages and baby drops, the ones who are left are much older, and because they have no, that's where they consider home, so they actually continue to provide the facility for a group of women, older women, who have basically grown up in this institution. So you also have that there. The convent school, I think most probably what's in your mind is the main block, which is the sort of neo-Gothic style block, right? That's the one that makes most impression on people. And because of its sort of Gothic style windows, its arcades, its shutters, and that's the one that you see from the road. It's only a very, not small part, but it's only a part of the main school, because that's, you have that school, then you have a quadrangle behind it, and then there are a whole bunch of other blocks which grew up or which were built, over subsequent years, which then house first the secondary school and then later the Form 6 block as well. So while stylistically it's different, there are certain elements of this building that you go, I can kind of recognize some elements in terms of the detail of the design. But the style of it is really quite different from those other two buildings. This was 1911 when they were building it, 1911, 1912, whereas the Sulaiman buildings in the 1920s, mid to late 20s. The mosque, of course, was the 1930s. So as he started here as a sort of a younger architect, you know. But that is, I suppose, primarily the main block that people remember. And I think that anybody who goes to school there, you can interview anyone who goes to school there, they will remember it. They will remember sort of the windows, the thickness, the wideness of the corridors. It's over the years, it has been changed. I mean, there have been, you know, expansions, extensions. What would have been louvered windows have been changed. What were timber might be now glass. But the whole idea of these buildings as were pretty monumental, and they were there for security and for the safety of the kids who were in the school, and for the nuns, of course. But they were also there as something that was, you know, really quite dramatic. I think at the time it was built, it cost like $26,000 to be built, which is quite a lot of money, you know. They managed to do that because they sold their building in Brickfields for $60,000. They bought the land here for $40,000, and they then built the building, and they had to raise funds to, you know, continue. And of course, over the years, as they expanded, they've had to do that. Now, that's going back to your question about the mission school. So they were started that way. But I think, if I'm not mistaken, by the 1970s, with the nationalization of the school system, it became sort of like partly government and partly non-government, meaning partly remaining with the church. So the property itself remains with the nuns. It's they own the land and they own the buildings. But the teachers, the curriculum that they follow has always been part of the national curriculum. But CBN, I think, as it's known by a lot of people who say, oh, you know, CBN, you're a CBNer, also started doing, after post-Second World War and post the Japanese occupation, they started training teachers because they needed more teachers, you know, as in the redevelopment and the building up of the country post the end of the Japanese occupation. So by the 1950s, they were training teachers. So you will have a lot of people who went through that system because they were, you know, like St. John's, like VI, like Convent Bukit Nanas. They were seen as premier schools. And then the other premier school, of course, in the neighborhood was St. Mary's. St. Mary's is now gone and moved to Gombak, Selayang, somewhere that side. And the building's gone, and now it's a high rise. And you don't actually sort of see the evidence of it. You know, I think the only three schools that remain in the neighborhood where the original sort of what you would have talked about as the rivalry, yeah, the rivalry was always between, on the girls' schools were between St. Mary's and Convent Bukit Nanas. And when Assunta Convent in PJ came up, you know, that became a rival school as well. And then on the boys' side, of course, there was VI and St. John's, which were the rival schools, you know. So you have this, you know, which school did you come from? And, you know, a sense of loyalty toward your school.
Do all other convents in Malaysia share almost the same design as Convent Bukit Nanas, at least architecturally speaking?
Oh, no. I think it really very much depends on where they were located, who built them, and what the ideas were behind the people who built them. I mean, Convent Light Street, for example, you know, the original blocks are older. They are, and it was a much larger, the original block was much larger, you had longer, wider colonnades. But you also have the sense of, if you look at the mission schools, but you also look at VI. VI had more a field in front. You look at Convent Bukit Nanas, you look at some of these other schools, you look at Light Street Convent, girls' schools, you know, you had the field was kind of like surrounded by buildings, so it was more like a quadrangle, and it protected the girls from prying eyes, you know, of the boys of the school opposite. You know, so you wanted to, because of the moral grounds of those days, maybe even today, you know, that was something that was... So you didn't have the feel, you know, like a lot of modern schools, the feel is in the middle, in the front of the school, right? In Convent Bukit Nanas, in Convent Light Street, the field is actually at back, so to speak, within the compound. So it is a different concept altogether. But the modern school, I went to a convent in Penang, a convent Green Lane, and it was a modern school when I went there. It started up in the 1960s. It started up in the 1960s. The field is in front. You know, it's there for all to see, like in a very modern, in the way in which it, you know, a more contemporary society saw it, the playing field, everybody's there, you share it between the primary and secondary school. There was no need to sort of ensconce the female away from the eyes of certain other people, you know, that kind of thing. So it has a different sense, and the style of this particular convent, especially this big main block that people recognize, yeah, this sort of Gothic style. You might find it in churches, you might find it in some other buildings, but you don't generally find it in that many. No, you do find it in older schools of its time. But, you know, schools that were built after the 19-teens and 1920s won't have that style of architecture. You might see some glimpses of that in St. Michael's Institution. You would see it, glimpses of that in some of the older buildings, but you don't actually get to see that in buildings that were built with more modern materials, with concrete. And a lot of the older buildings have been demolished and replaced with more modern contemporary structures, higher rises, air conditioning, your classes. I think the interesting thing about CBN, Convent Bukit Nanas, was in the 1980s, if I'm not mistaken, it was in the early 1980s, there was some discussion or talk about the government of Malaysia, I mean the federal government, acquiring these mission schools, and that included St. Mary's and Bukit Nanas and BBGS, acquiring them because they were in the center of the city and caused a lot of traffic jams, and because people were sending their kids to and from schools, right? And so there was some talk about it, these schools to be acquired for the land for these mission schools, especially, or these other schools that were more elite, that were on large tracts of land, that were seen as sort of, you know, more elite schools, to be paid off and relocated elsewhere. It didn't happen. There was a lot of protest for Convent Bukit Nanas. I think St. Mary's lost the battle, so to speak. Bukit Bintang Girls School lost that as well. St. John's retained itself. CBN retained. And I imagine, I would postulate, speculate, that part of the reason is because they were slightly off the main thoroughfares, you know. I mean, St. John's is like up on the hill, so it's kind of like a little enclave. It's an educational, institutional enclave, whereas BBGS and St. Mary's were really in almost in the heart of a commercial, or in the case of St. Mary's, you know, a banking, you know, the Golden Triangle kind of. These two were schools within the Golden Triangle, and they lost the battle, I think I would say, of a lot of the alumni who wanted to keep these schools there as part of the story of the development of the city and the growth of the city, and to provide, you know, the opportunities for people, for kids, to still come to them who lived in and around the area.
So what else can you comment about Bukit Nanas as an area, considering that, I mean, it has... There's not much commercial area there, at least directly within the area, right?
It is ringed by commercial area. It really is ringed by commercial area. If you look at the development now, the about-to-be development, which will further encroach into the Bukit Nanas Forest Reserve, it's on the edge of it. You know, that's opposite St. Andrew's church and opposite the Ambank building, you will see that there are all these high rises, you know, where the Shangri-La has come up. Oh, that was in the 1980s. Again, you know, that's all. So Bukit Nanas Forest Reserve is kind of like getting, you know, hemmed in, I think surrounded by tall buildings. One hopes that, the city authorities will retain in the new structure plan, will really make very clear, determined measures and policies to ensure that there is no further encroachment. I don't know that it's going to happen, but, you know, that's something that, Kuala Lumpur sorely needs, because KL, you know, the new structure plan says a city for all. It says that, you know, you want to have 20% of your land area be green. But green is not just open field. Green is actually, and it's not a new park, you know. It's not planted new trees. It's actually, you know, retaining what is there from its past. And really, it gives the city a breathing space. If you go into Bukit Nanas, we always send visitors into Bukit Nanas to walk around. And people actually go, wow, you know, even KLites who don't do that go, wow, you mean this is right in the middle of the city? You mean we have this? And it's really, you talk about having an asset. It's a gem of an asset. You know, a couple of like other stories related to Bukit Nanas, which people don't, maybe people don't really know, but the older people might remember. My mother went to school in Convent Bukit Nanas, and one of the things that she remembers, and she used to tell me, and people still talk about it, is that there used to be these steps that would lead down from the convent onto Jalan Ampang. You could directly access Jalan Ampang, but to get to and beside the school was this big house, and it was called Lok Hall. And Lok Hall was owned by Lok Yew's son, Alan Lok. He died in the 1940s, but he built Lok Hall, and the building's long gone. But the land was sold, and it became taken over by the AIA building. What is now the AIA building? There are two wings to the AIA building, but the original AIA building, which I think was built in the 1970s, early 70s maybe, had a very famous, it was very well known for its the treatment of its facade, which was this sun shading device made out of these sheets, aluminium sheets, and it was very distinctive, and everybody kind of like recognized it, and it was really seen as an iconic building for Jalan Ampang. Inside, just two stories related to that. So Alan Luke's house disappeared. It became, Lok Hall disappeared. It became the AIA building. There is still a connection from Bukit Nanas Hill to Jalan Ampang through the AIA building. They still allowed a connection. But the gate, the original gate post and the gate of Alan Luke's house still remains. His original insignia is still there. You kind of have to know it to look for it. Because, of course, they have, you know, they have clad it over with new things, and the new AIA logo sits over it. But the original gateway still remains to today. I don't know how many people remember that, or people who have left it there because it was there. But I think in designing the new building, that was left there kind of like as a memory of Lok Hall. But the AIA building is actually also would have been known in the 19... And for a long time, there was this rather interesting, famous incident that happened there in the 1970s. I think it was the early 70s, 72, 73, if I'm not mistaken. The American Embassy used to be located there before they moved to Jalan Tun Razak, before they built their building in Jalan Tun Razak. They were located in the AIA building. And there was an incursion into the embassy, and they were taken over by the Japanese Red Army, some members of the Japanese Red Army, who made certain political demands of the Americans, and there were people who were taken hostage. And so for a while, there was all of this, you know, gossip, you know, and well, you know, like, you know, this is, Malaysia doesn't, like, experience this kind of, like, terrorism threat, right? It's not something that we were used to in the 1970s. So this whole thing that broke out, I'm fairly sure it was the 1970s, was this Red Army takeover of this building. There are actually, if you Google it, you will find there are video, you know, there were news stories on it, and, you know, it's still, there were interviews, people, I think somebody was hurt. I don't know that anybody died in it, but I remember, I was a kid then, I remember a cartoon by Lat in the New Straits Times after, you know, as a result of this incident, and again, the older generation, not your generation, but my generation, will remember this of the sort of this image of the Red Army, you know, with the red headbands, a Japanese slit eye, sort of like the samurai, like, you know, the ninja type character, coming up in a little submarine, the Klang River, and then making their way into to take over. And it was just quite a hysterical, it was just a really funny cartoon. But it's sort of that sort of, those are kind of like famous incidents that you will, you know, look at as sort of, as part of the story of this Pineapple Hill. And then I think in about 2015 or thereabouts, when they were doing sort of like works to do with the MRT and they were clearing up the hill and things like that, there was a bit of a collapse of one of the hill slopes. And what was uncovered was a tunnel, entrance to a tunnel on the side of Bukit Nanas, Jalan Bukit Nanas. On Jalan Ampang, they've covered it. You can't actually get into it, which is believed to have been one of several tunnels that led up to this stockade that I was talking about earlier. I don't know that they've ever explored it, because there was this story, it went, you know, in the newspapers, oh, you know, there is this tunnel and there are more tunnels, and where does it lead to, and where does it come out, and, you know, who used it, etc., etc. But it was sort of like an earth, like a little, what do you call it, terowong lah, you know, and that was cut into the hill and went upward, you know, into the hill, one assumes would eventually find its way out. And I read, I don't know for a fact, but I read that there were supposed to be several tunnels around this Bukit Nanas that would have led, which were escaped into, from the stockade down to the river, you know, and that was all sort of part of the Selangor Civil War, which, you know, harkens back to the 1870s, you know, so 1860s and 1870s. So that's sort of part of this story, the myth of, you know, Bukit Nanas, which I think is just a fun story about the hill apart from the forest reserve.
You've been listening to I Love KL, and this week, heritage conservation expert Elizabeth Cardosa joined me as we unpack the history of Bukit Nanas and the famous institution there, Convent Bukit Nanas. And that's the end of I Love KL's monthly feature on historical buildings and places in the Klang Valley. If you miss any part of the show, you can check out the podcast at bfm.my/ilovekl, our app, which you can find via Google Play and the App Store, and also Spotify. Don't forget to also follow the station on Twitter at BFM Radio. My name is Hanif Baharudin, and you've been tuning in to I Love KL, bringing you closer to the people and places of our capital city. Join us again next week, only on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.